Psalm 55, folks. Psalms 55. With all the sickness going around, let me remind you what we're trying to do here. You know, there's no indication this is COVID related, anybody that's sick. We're encouraging folks that are sick. We've always kind of encouraged it, but have been much more open about just, you know, if you're sick, you know, please stay home. That way, you know, if somebody does get COVID, we're less inclined to be infected and stuff. We haven't had any kind of outbreak here since the November outbreak. And as you know, everybody in the world, it seemed like, got COVID over a week's time, some sort of perfect storm, and we haven't had to deal with it since. So just pray that's the case. And I don't know if, I know that one of the strange things that was going on was that Brother Roger Harrison's a friend of mine that pastors over in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. And he wound up COVID positive, and this was 3 or 4 months ago. And the COVID affected his gastric system really bad, and it somehow infected his celiac artery and through his intestines. And so he was really, really, really hurting. And so we're hoping that this gastric thing that's going on is not something like that. But I'm not suggesting it is. I'm not a doctor and couldn't guess, so I don't know. But just pray that, you know, we can stay clear with everything going on, people coming and going and leaving and coming back. And by the way, Brother Peacock is still planning to come March 1st or the 3rd. He still has folks in his church with COVID too. So, you know, if we have COVID and he comes here, then we're probably going to just wave him off, because I don't want his wife to get sick. But just pray that things clear up, all right? All right, we're in Psalms 55. I'll add to that, you know, that's why we're still wearing masks, you know, when we come in and stuff. And so I know it's easy to let your guard down, and I just ask that you wouldn't yet, because every time we do, then somebody gets sick with something. So if you would just be careful with that, I'd appreciate it. All right, verse 15. We got down through verse 13 and 14 last time. We're talking about the Lord Jesus Christ betrayed, and of course the verse 13, but it was thou, a man, mine equal, my God, and mine acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked into the house of God in company. And I propose that probably wasn't Jesus prophesying of Judas Iscariot, since Judas was not a man mine equal or my guide. But I would advocate that it was probably Ahithophel, perhaps Abimelech, that he was thinking of when he wrote that down. Of course, you kind of see Judas through it. But verse 15 is where we start this time. Now, this is that kind of praying I've talked about a couple times, and we Christians don't pray this way. It's called an imprecatory prayer. In other words, he's praying down doom on somebody. And you're asked to pray, you're told to pray for your enemies and love them anyway, and all those sort of things. And so you're not supposed to, as a New Testament Christian, because Christ showed you such mercy, you're not supposed to be praying that somebody, that your enemy gets it in the neck and goes to hell and all this kind of stuff, right? So this is David praying it, though. It says, let death seize upon them, let them go down quick into hell, for wickedness is in their dwellings and among them. Now it says, let them go down quick into hell. I wanted to remind you of a couple things here just real briefly tonight, and one of the things is how badly the new versions have messed stuff up. For instance, very specifically in verse 15, he is praying about some folks going down quick, that is, alive, into hell. Now, somebody did that in the Old Testament, but before I go show you that, let me just remind you, if you're playing with new versions, they don't say what the King James Bible says. For instance, the ASV, let death come suddenly upon them, let them go down alive into Sheol. Sheol. The CEV, that's the contemporary English version. All who hate me are controlled by the power of evil, sentence them to death and send them down alive to the world of the dead. Anything but hell. The ESV, which is a very popular version these days, let death steal over them, let them go down to Sheol alive. In the International Standard, again, another popular version, may they be plunged alive into the afterlife. Plunged alive into the afterlife, whatever that means. The NIV, and there are various NIV offshoots, but let death take my enemies by surprise, let them go down alive to the grave. And the another one, let them go down alive to the realm of the dead. Now, the word is Sheol. And that's a, now, for anybody that's here that doesn't know, it's a Hebrew word, and I don't play with Greek and Hebrew to get light, okay? If there's any playing with Hebrew done on my part, it's to show the King James Bible's right. And as much as you hear on Christian radio and other places that you go, if you go, where they correct the Bible or try to embellish the Bible, the English Bible, the King James Bible, with Greek and Hebrew, you're probably aware that they don't really succeed very well. There's never any more light given. In fact, when you study it carefully, there's a great deal of darkness that's ministered rather than light. And so I first of all point out to you in chapter 55, verse 15, that he specifies there, let them go down quick into hell. Now, that should remind you of a passage, perhaps, if you read the Old Testament much. Numbers chapter 16, there were some folks that went down alive quick somewhere. Look in Numbers chapter 16. Numbers chapter 16, if you will, and go down to verse 30. Numbers 16, 30. Now this is the rebellion of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram back in verse 24. They decided that Moses wasn't all that he was built up to be, and so they decided to take him on. Well, down in verse 30, in the midst of rebuking them, he said, but if the Lord make a new thing and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up, these are talking about these guys that are rebelling, with all that appertaineth unto them, they go down quick, notice, into the pit. So David specifies hell, and Moses, in writing Numbers, specifies the pit. Now, it turns out those are the same thing, but keep on reading. Then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord. Came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder that was under them. The earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods. So they went down, verse 33, went down alive. That's what quick means, alive. They went down quick into the pit, alive into the pit. Okay, now that's hell. I wanted to show you Isaiah chapter 14, verse 15. Isaiah 14, 15. Now, this is the devil making his boast. This is what caused the devil to fall. And the devil's bragging. And it says in verse 13, for thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend unto heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will be like the Most High. Yet there's a bit more to the story, says the Lord, yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. Down to hell, the sides of the pit. Now, that verse, just notice the difference one more time and tell me how you're being benefited by reading a new Bible. The ASV in Isaiah 14:15 says, "Yet thou shalt be brought down to Sheol, to the uttermost parts of the pit." But now, and the CEV says, "But now you are deep in the world of the dead." The ESV, "But ye are brought down to Sheol, to the far reaches of the pit." The ISV, "You'll join the dead in the far reaches of the pit." The NIV, "The grave, the depths of the pit." The New King James Version. The New King James Version. I mean, all they changed was the these and thou. "Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit." See, they changed that one. Now, you say, what are they trying to do? They're trying to air condition hell. And they refuse to accept that Sheol, the Lord used Sheol. We're going to talk more about Sheol in a second. Let me just run you to a couple more things. Now, it said back in Isaiah 14:15, that thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. Now, there's one other thing that's said about this pit. In fact, it's mentioned seven times in the book of Revelation. Look in chapter 9, Revelation 9, real fast, verse 1. This pit, this hell, is defined seven times in the book of Revelation as the bottomless pit. And so when you stop and think about it, I mean, that's why he said what he said in Isaiah, that I'm going to bring it down to the sides of the pit. Let me just read Revelation 9:1 for you here real fast. "And the fifth angel sounded, I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit." Okay, here's the deal. The earth is round. That's a scientific fact. When you study hell, you find that hell is in the center of the earth. Okay, that's hell. That's the pit. Okay, when you go to hell, it's bottomless because it's all sides, right? There's no bottom and top when you're in the center of a circle. It's a bottomless pit. It's the sides of a pit. Now, when it says the bottomless pit again, they don't like that at all. The ASV, "And the fifth angel sounded, I saw a star from heaven fallen to the earth, and there was given to him the key of the pit of the abyss." A-B-Y-S-S. Boy, I wish I knew what that even was. I understand pit, but abyss, whatever. "The fifth angel blew his trumpet, another one. And then I saw a star that had fallen from the sky to the earth. The star was given the key to the tunnel leading down to the abyss." The abyss, I guess you would pronounce it. And finally, the NIV, the star was given the key to the shaft of the abyss. So there's this abyss. It has a shaft, and it has a tunnel, and it has a door because it has a key. So I don't know. But what I was getting at with showing you some of that stuff is that this is one of the things that the new versions play with and that all the scholars play with. And that, by the way, speaking of JWs, this is where the JWs go to town, okay? Because the word Sheol shows up, like I said, I don't do this for authority. I show you this because the King James translators, God used them to clarify something that wasn't clear in the Hebrew. That means that the English is superior to the Greek and Hebrew. Okay? Now, Sheol shows up like 70 times in the Old Testament Hebrew. And most usually, or I should say a lot of times, it is translated grave. And so the JWs are not without reason at times for translating it grave. What I say is that they're wrong in translating it grave where they translate it. The King James translators made it plain. For instance, let me just take you to a few examples here. And again, these are all the same words. And again, I just remind you, there's a great trap in being convinced that you're able to go in a Strong's Concordance, the back of a Strong's Concordance, and use the dictionary and go look up a word by the number and see that, well, this word, you know, in this place was translated this, and it also could mean this, and it also could mean this. You find in the Strong's Concordance, you can go look it up in the back. But sometimes a Hebrew word could be translated like 12 different ways. Okay, which one's right? They all ain't right. So how are you going to decide which one's right? Well, that's just it. You're not. You have a final authority. Somebody a lot smarter than you that God guided and that whose work has stood up over the last 400 years already arbitrated that decision. You're out of it. You have no choice anymore. You can rebel if you want to, but you have no right to go in and change the book. I mean, it's authorized, it's set, it's settled, and you have no right whatsoever. Now, Sheol, I was going to show you Genesis chapter 37, verse 35. Genesis 37. That is not the verse I wanted. Yeah, it is. All right, verse 35. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him. Now, this is Joseph. This is Jacob, since Joseph's been sold, and now he thinks he's dead. He says, and all his sons and daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, for I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning. I will go down unto the grave. So he translates there, the grave is Sheol in Hebrew. Okay, they didn't use the word hell because Jacob didn't go to hell. Plainly, he went to the grave, right? Okay, so it does use the word grave. That's what my point is that the King James Bible dictates how a word is translated and where. Whereas what these guys want to do is they want to go back and repave a highway that's already been paved. They want to tear something up and know it's already been settled. For instance, 1 Kings chapter 2. 1 Kings 2. Now, I like this exercise because it's something that modern Old and New Testament scholars will not admit to. They, you know, if they're not true King James Bible believers, they will not talk to you about this. I mean, they will reject what I'm teaching you tonight as out-and-out heresy, and they won't even talk to you about it because they want an authority that's flexible. And they've been taught for their entire lives and their bank account, their careers depend upon essentially having the right to change the Bible. Otherwise, if you have a final authority, you don't need them, right? Now, 1 Kings chapter 2, and notice verse 6, 1 Kings 2, 6. And so David is about to die in verse 1. And down in verse 5, he's telling his son, I think I preached about this recently, Solomon, he's going to have to deal with Joab because Joab's a problem. Verse 6, do therefore according to thy wisdom, and let not his hoar head, now that means his gray head, go down to the grave in peace. He didn't say hell, he said grave in peace. And that's reasonable. Look down in chapter 2, verse 9. And this is about Barzillai, or rather Shimei. Verse 9, now therefore hold him not guiltless, for thou art a wise man, and knowest that thou what thou oughtest to do unto him, but his hoar head bring thou down to the grave with blood. So these guys die, and they do go lay down in a grave, and in those, which we all do, but he uses the word Sheol. Now, the other thing that Sheol is used for is a word that we've been seeing here. We were just in Numbers 16, right? I guess we should go back and just see it. Numbers 16 once again. Numbers chapter 16, verse 30. Once again, Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, they go down in the middle of the verse quick into the pit. Now, in that case, pit is Sheol. And sometimes Sheol is translated grave in the Old Testament. That's true enough when it applies to the grave. In other places, it does apply to the pit. Look in just another place, Job 17, handful of places like that. Job 17. and verse 16. They shall go down to the bars of the pit when our rest together is in the dust. So they're going to go on down to the pit after their bodies rest in the grave. So that's pretty ominous. Now, this next one really ties the rag on the bush, because Sheol, by the Old Testament scholars that are Bible correctors, is always referred, usually they don't even translate it. That's why you had some of the new versions that they wouldn't even translate it. They just left it in because they would prefer to leave it in the Hebrew so they don't have to translate it, because after all, they would have to decide then whether it's translated hell or the pit or Sheol, rather the grave. Sometimes it is translated the grave, but also that is the Old Testament word for hell. And again, you have the same word for all three, same Hebrew word for all three. How do you know which one should be what? How does a scholar decide? All I know is that God led 46 scholars to decide. They checked each other's work like 14 times, and they all agreed in the end. Look, how, could you answer me this? You know how smart people are. You know how really, really, you know, intellectual people are. They're really proud. How are you going to get 46 brilliant, talented scholars to sit down in a room, really three rooms, and come to an agreement about how a word should be translated? It has to be God, because human nature is such that, oh no, I think it should be great. Well, I think it should be Hebrew. And it's going to go on forever, right? All right, look in, if you will, Deuteronomy 32. Deuteronomy 32. And when you see hell in the Old Testament, that is the word Sheol in Hebrew. Sometimes it's translated grave when it means grave. Sometimes it's translated pit when it means pit. And usually that means hell. But Deuteronomy chapter 32, go down to verse 22. Deuteronomy 32, 22. For a fire is kindled in mine anger, it shall burn unto the lowest Sheol. Because that's what it is, Sheol. Burn to the lowest grave. Does God's anger burn to the lowest grave? No, it burns to the lowest hell. That's why it's translated hell. That's why it is hell. Right? But it's the same word as grave and pit. Look at one more for me, if you would. Look in Psalm 16. Psalm 16. Now, I drag you through this so you'll be aware. And one thing that Doc taught us is that this whole thing is a scam. This whole thing is a bunch of smart people that have, they think they have the intellectual leg up on a bunch of other people. And it's basically a scam. It's kind of like what your government's doing to you right now. It's a bunch of people with power and authority misusing the power and authority. And so you'll send your kid off to Bible college, and sometimes you're going to pay $20,000 or $30,000 a year to send him. And he's going to go in, a Bible believer perhaps, and come out with a whole bunch of questions and have him been taught wrong by a bunch of people that get paid to do so. And they're really just, they're just really gunslingers, and they're crooks. The fact is they don't have faith. They don't believe. And, it's pretty brutal to say it, but it's just true. Now, look in Psalm 16 real fast. Psalm 16. And notice verse 10, Psalm 16:10. I keep turning back and forth past it. 16:10. For thou wilt not leave my soul in hell. Well, that's Jesus Christ. Now, imagine translating that. Thou wilt not leave my soul in the grave. Well, he didn't do that either. But the soul doesn't stop at the grave. Correct? Now, this is put on display, and I'm not going to drag you through an awful lot of stuff here, but I did want to show you a couple things here real quick. For instance, let's go back to Isaiah 14 for a second. Isaiah 14. And you've been led to think, if you've believed them, that if you had a Hebrew or Greek education, and you knew the verb and the noun forms, that you could go and translate the Hebrew or Greek correctly, where, say, the King James translators might have messed it up. But it's not that way. It is not that way. Like I said, if you go to a Strong's Concordance, look in the back in the dictionary, the Chaldee dictionary, well, that's Hebrew. And for that matter, the Greek dictionary in back, you're going to find that some of those words have 10 and 12 different possible ways to translate them. How are you going to choose? See, all they're doing, and they're playing the game, they don't like what it says, and so they're going to change it to something else that they can justify from a dictionary. And therefore, they're allowed to change the Bible. And you're not allowed to do that. I mean, it's not right. Now, Isaiah, let me just show you this. Isaiah 14. The King James translators, I believe, were led to do what they did. Because, for instance, if you start reading in verse 7, 14:7, the whole earth is at rest and is quiet, they break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee, the cedars of Lebanon saying, since thou art laid down, no feller is come up against us. Now, it's talking about the king of Babylon falling, the wicked in verse 5. That's Lucifer in verse 12. And then in verse 9 it says, hell from beneath is moved for thee. Okay, that's Sheol, hell. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. I mean, when the devil finally shows up in hell, gets locked into hell, you know, a bunch of people are going to stand up and take notice, is what he's saying. Verse 9, it hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave. That's Sheol. That's Sheol. In verse 9, it's translated hell. In verse 11, it's translated grave, because after all, the king of Babylon is going to go to the grave, and in the grave, I know that in hell, where the worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched, there are worms, but when folks go to the grave, their body lays there and rots, and they're covered with worms if you go in there at the right time. Verse 11, thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. But again, grave is Sheol. Now keep going down to verse 15. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. Hell is Sheol. Now on top of it, in verse 19, but thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch. Well, you don't get out of hell, right? Okay, but thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch. In that case, the word grave is something entirely different. It's not Sheol at all. It's some other Hebrew word. So let me ask you a question. If you're a scholar and you're just going, I mean, you don't have a preconceived conception doctrinally of what you're not going to try to jam your doctrinal preferences in, and you just have language before you, just as a linguist, you're just going to translate linguistically. Well, why in the world in verse 9 would you translate Sheol hell, in verse 11 translate Sheol grave, in verse 15 translate Sheol hell, in verse 19 translate another word entirely, grave? You see what I'm saying? God has to guide that, or it doesn't work. I'll show you another example of that, and then we'll be able to close up and go do something else. Look in Ezekiel chapter 31. Ezekiel 31. In Ezekiel 31, there's a whole bunch of references here to somebody, the Assyrian, in 31:3. Being in the garden of God, and so the Assyrian wasn't in the garden of God, but the devil was, right? So once again, the devil's being addressed by this. Now, one of the things that keeps coming up is like verse 14. They are all delivered unto death to the nether parts of the earth. Okay, so In the Old Testament, you die and you go to the nether parts of the earth. If you're wicked, you went to hell, right? Okay, in the midst of the children of men, with them that go down to the pit. So the nether parts of the earth, down to the pit. Verse 16, I made the nations to shake at the sound of his fall when I cast him down to hell with them that descend to the pit. So do you get the idea that the pit and hell are the same place? Verse 17, they also went down into hell. Now this goes on for a while. I mean, the next couple of chapters are all about this. Look in 31:18. Notice the middle of the verse, the nether parts of the earth. He keeps predicting. Somebody's going to the lower parts of the earth. They're going to the pit. They're going to hell. Verse 18, unto the nether parts of the earth, down into the pit. Verse 21, in the midst of hell. Down in verse 24, the nether parts of the earth. I'm in Ezekiel 32 now, if I didn't say that. The end of the verse, go down to the pit in verse 24. Verse 25, down to the pit. Verse 27, down to hell. Verse 29, go down to the pit. Now, what I wanted to show you with this is, once again, the King James Bible is consistent all the way across the board, but how would you have done this if you were just a scholar with just Hebrew words before you? In chapter 15, it says, thus saith the Lord God, in the day when he went down to the grave. Now that's the word Sheol, okay? But then you get down to verse 16. I made the nations to shake at the sound of his fall when I cast him down to hell. This time Sheol is hell. Verse 17. They also went down into hell. This time Sheol is hell. But still he translated it grave back in verse 15 because it's talking about his death. Now my point is, just linguistically looking at it, why would you have made a distinction? Why would you have changed, for instance, if you want to play the game in the New Testament, why would you change agape, love, every time, except for 17 times where you said charity? Think about this. You're a brilliant scholar, an academic. I mean, you have one of those guys would go to on vacation every summer and would learn a language on vacation and come back speaking and writing it. It's not what I do with my vacations. But we're talking brilliant people. Now, how does one brilliant man among 46 stand up and say, okay, all the way through the Bible, the New Testament, the word agape is love. But for these 17 times, we're going to translate it charity, okay? Everybody goes, okay. What kind of sense does that make if you're just a linguist? You say, what's the point? The point is, there's no explanation for that stuff, but that God led those guys to do it. And so I'm not embarrassed at all to say that I believe that God used the King James translators to finalize any questions that there were to be finalized. Do I have all the answers for everything? No, because I'm still studying and learning. But I mean, as far as the final authority, I believe that God used 46 English translators to finalize the Hebrew and Greek Bible. And so all that ambiguity, all that uncertainty about words that could be translated 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 different ways or 12 or 14 is all settled in the King James Bible. It wasn't settled in Tyndale's day. It wasn't settled by the Geneva Bible. It was settled by the King James Bible. Okay? So that's where I'm at. I don't know where you are, but that's where I is. That's where I is. Anyway. Okay, we're back to Psalms 55. Psalm 55. All right, Psalm 55. I just thought I'd take some time and show you that. You've seen it before, but verse 15, let death seize upon him. Again, an imprecatory prayer where the Lord, the writer is praying damnation down on his enemies. And let them go down quick into hell, for wickedness is in their dwellings and among them. As for me, David talking about himself, I will call upon God and the Lord shall save me. You have to pray carefully and consider carefully. You know, our proclivities revolve around getting in a bind or getting in a fix or having somebody rise up against us or having enemies or whatever. And then there we've got to do something instead of praying. But it says there, as for me, I will call upon God and the Lord shall save me. You know, it's not, David had an army. David had mighty men round about him. And instead of employing the mighty men to go after his enemies in verse 15, he said, I'm going to pray. So you need to think about that before you just go off and, you know, jack somebody up because you think that you know what's best. You better pray, right? Verse 17, evening and morning and at noon will I pray and cry aloud. You say, well, that's, you know, the legalistic Old Testament Jewish way of doing things, praying at evening, morning, and noon. Wouldn't be a bad thing for you. It doesn't say that he prayed for an hour at evening and an hour at morning and an hour at noon. If you have an hour, that'd be great. But how about just stopping for 5 minutes? You know, you need more than 5 minutes for some time, but how about just making a point evening, morning, and at noon to stop for 5 minutes each and just pray? And then when you get more time, to pray longer. But what if you just stopped? I mean, don't you call your wife sometime during the day, guys? Or maybe you're too old now to do that. You lost your sense of humor tonight already. I mean, seriously. I mean, you know, I mean, most days I'll wind up, if Marcy's not actually working, I'll wind up calling her just, you know, well, you know, wanted me to bring something home for supper. I'm near Cub Foods or whatever. And sometimes not, you know. It's just an excuse to call her. You know, just want to hear her melodic voice. Well, you say, well, that's goofy. Not when you were in love with her at first. And if you loved her like that and checked in with her and couldn't wait to hear her voice, why would it be a big deal for you to set aside 3 times a day to just make sure you check in with the Lord? Doesn't have to be an hour-long thing. Evening and morning and at noon will I pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. Roloff had a song about that. He hath delivered my soul in peace from the battle that was against me, for there were many with me. Now, he says, there were many with me. Is he talking about his mighty men? Is he talking about his armies? Take your Bibles over to 2 Chronicles 32 here real fast. 2 Chronicles 32. Second Chronicles 32 and verse 7. This is regarding Hezekiah's day, the siege of Jerusalem, when the king of Assyria, Sennacherib, came up and camped round about the whole thing, and it looked really, really bad. There was no way they were going to fight their way out of this one. But in verse 7, be strong and courageous. Be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him, for there be more with us than with him. Not soldiers. Not soldiers. They didn't have more soldiers than the king of Assyria had. But they had spiritual power. Now you see it a little clearer in another passage here, if you will. Look in 2 Kings 6. 2 Kings 6. Second Kings chapter 6. And the young man is concerned about the Syrians round about. They're just surrounded. And verse 16, this is Elisha. He answered, fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them. And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes, the eyes of the young prophet, that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elijah. There were a lot more with Elijah than you could see. Now, folks, I mean, we're not talking about literal battle here, but your God is the God of the heavens and the earth. And there is no issue. If he decides something in your favor, then nobody can argue. And so you can always pray knowing that You know, he may want you to go through something, but you can always pray knowing that nobody overpowers God. So it says down in verse 18, he hath delivered my soul in peace from the battle that was against me. I'm in Psalm 55, 18. For there were many with me. God shall hear and afflict them, even he that abideth of old. And notice Selah. So he's talking about the second advent of Christ. So this probably revolves around tribulation stuff. But notice a very important thing that's said. I've been trying to get a sermon together on it, and I can't get it to come together right. But verse 19, and notice, God shall hear and afflict them, even he that abideth of old, Selah, because they have no changes. Therefore they fear not God. That is a profound insight into human nature. The profound insight into human nature is that we get real cozy and real comfortable with stuff that we're accustomed to. Yeah. The church bought me a new computer, right? Y'all knew about that. Guy came out last night and installed it. A nice computer, man. It's like a jet airplane cockpit. And so now I've got two screens instead of one. I'm trying to jockey back and forth and get used to it. But meanwhile, for some reason, my contacts, my email addresses and stuff for everybody didn't migrate with the rest of the data. He's going to come back out and try to straighten it out. But I'm sitting there this morning, and I can't send my email. I mean, it's like travail. It's like having a baby or something. I'm serious. I couldn't believe it. I just kicked myself around for a while thinking how far this has taken me out of my comfort zone. I'm just about ready to cry because I don't have my email addresses. It says there in that verse, it says that because they have no changes, therefore they fear not God. You know, in America for a long time, we've had things real good. Like really good. And there's always mully grubbing on the news and mully grubbing economists, and you know, and I understand, and there's a lot of precept to it. The fact of the matter is very few of us have gone hungry. Very few of us don't have any money in our pockets at all. Very few of us have, you know, I mean, all of us have more clothes than we can wear in a week. More food than you can eat in a month, probably. At your house right now. So what's the point? Well, it might be real hard for God to get to folks who are that comfortable, who are that settled. And so he says, because they have no changes, therefore they fear not God. So what is God going to do? God's going to bring stuff along just to rattle your tree. He's going to come shake your tree just so some stuff changes, just so you don't get too cozied up and all tucked away, all, you know, all cozy and warm, and you're just going to stay here forever, and you know, with, you're surrounded by your cushions and stuff. The Lord's not going to leave you there. And I think that he's fed up enough with America that he's not going to leave America there. He said, because they have no changes, therefore they fear not God. I wanted to show you a verse. Look in 2 Peter chapter 3. If you don't, we've seen this verse a lot here recently, but 2 Peter chapter 3. Isn't this what it's saying? 2 Peter chapter 3. With the scoffers of the last days who walk after their own lusts, verse 4, say, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. Nothing's changed. We're going along just like things have always gone along. Right? Well, the Bible says, because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore are the hearts of the sons of men fully set in them to do evil. Because nothing changes, because lightning doesn't fall, because judgment doesn't fall. Why? Because God is good, because God is merciful. As much as not, unless somebody's heart's right, it just drives them further and further into backsliddenness. So you should be aware that the Lord is real interested in keeping you not as comfortable as you would like to be. I mean, you always talk about stretching your comfort zone a little bit, and I know that that can be kind of a new agey type deal. But the truth of the matter is, I believe that God undertakes to do that in our lives all the time. He doesn't need you all cozied up. He needs you uncomfortable in this world, uncomfortable enough to not want to camp here and get rooted and grounded and just settled here. And that's what's happened. But he says, because they have no changes, therefore they fear not God. He hath put forth his hands against such as be at peace with him. He hath broken his covenant. That gets real prophetic. And so we're going to save that for next time. So we'll stop at verse 19. Any questions or comments? All right, let's find a hymn book, maybe sing one more here before we get out of here tonight.